I just thought of a dark joke. What? Have you been following the stuff with the BAFTA, Michael B. Yeah. Jordan? I just thought about a joke saying he could have said, man, I had Tourette's. It just slip out sometimes.
I'm screaming because he did say the word bye.
Exactly. Welcome back to the Sexual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD.
We got Cyber Shorty in the house.
And today we'll be talking about the PayPal data breach, Anthropic tells the Pentagon no, Block had a massive layoff for AI, FBI, ATM attempts, how to act in corporate, and more. Welcome back, guys. We wanted to stay going live for y'all, but, you know, we work, so we got to work around all that. However, I think I want to start off with what episode did you get to on Paradise?
Episode zero, because I haven't had the chance to start. I've been so busy, but maybe that'll be my treat this weekend to just binge it and get it over with. What you think so far?
It's different. I think it's doing a slow.
I don't like different.
It's not hitting you with a bang like season one. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing more world building.
It's a slow build.
To connect all the dots. Because that was the hard part. Like, they only had, like, I think, eight episodes in season one. And so it was like all over the place, but it started making sense. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, did you get a chance to watch season four of Lincoln Lawyer?
No. I haven't even watched Lincoln Lawyer, but I did hear I did hear good things about it.
Come on now, dog. Come on, man.
I know. It's so many shows on my to watch list.
So what have you watched?
I've been watching like low effort stuff like 90 Day Fiance.
Okay.
There's a new season before the 90 days. I've been watching Love After Lockup. Like just easy, quick watches. Like nothing that like I have to necessarily pay attention to. I can listen to it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to spoil anything about Lincoln Lawyer to you. It's also a movie with Matthew McConaughey, but the series is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And if you are a fan of Mickey Haller and you're watching the premiere right now, put a 2 in the chat. I think it's excellent. It got renewed for season 5. I always joke and say that Lincoln Lawyer is where Reasonable Doubt wants to be.
Mm-hmm. You can tell, so it must be real good then. Cause
you can tell the budget's better on Lincoln Lawyer. Acting's much better as well, too. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to lie. They stepped it up in season 3 of Reasonable Doubt with Ozzy.
Okay. Why did they have to kill him? It was so good. It was so, like, I was sobbing. I did not think that's where it was going. Because you remember I thought one of the kids died or her mama. Because, you know, they staged it for us to think that it was her mama or daddy or something. That bothered me. But he acted his butt off.
Yeah, no, for sure. He definitely did that. You know somebody doing a good job when you go from not liking them to rooting for them.
Literally. Because he was getting on my nerve. I actually wanted him to be done. Like, I think I had even told you, like, I'm sick of him.
yeah, for sure. Now, I'm trying to think if it's any other decent show that
you
I watched.
You said Cross.
Cross. So I started season 2 of Cross.
Don't tell me it's disappointing.
It's not disappointing. It's just different. Because season 1 was more so based on more so Cross and, you know, finding a person. This one is like finding a person and like everybody else got their own stuff they're dealing with as well, too.
Beauty and Black, is that out yet, the new season?
I stopped watching it.
I couldn't even get through the first season.
I got through the first season just because I ain't have nothing to do.
It was like a cheap version of P-Valley for me. The acting was just not there for me.
Did you watch Joe's College Road Trip?
I did, and it actually had me on the floor.
I heard people just want him to stick to that trope, but I heard it was actually pretty good.
I like Joe. I'm so happy that he actually gave Joe a space to shine. Now, Joe got up there and acted like Joe. Joe was cutting. I thought I'd be cutting up. No, Joe was cutting up from the time it start all the way to the end. He said every cuss word you can think of, he said it.
Yeah, for sure. But let's get into, I guess, now this is a topic we don't have an article for, but I thought we could start off with this. And I briefly wanted to talk about corporate etiquette.
Let's talk about it.
And how, at least for Black people, right?
What sparked this?
It sparked from the latest thing I did what was it? The one I dropped, I'm telling the truth about the job market in 2026. Mm-hmm. And it spurred from that and then all different type of content that we have that's out, like about corporate etiquette and being black and corporate and all the different, whether it's microaggressions or, you know, not to be yourself, got to be the representative of what fits their culture and everything else. And I know you, I have a lot of people that come in the comments sometimes saying, hey, this is not just a black issue. We not worried about what we ain't. We only focusing on black people stuff. Like, I don't like when people do that because I'm not worried about them. I'm talking about black people. This is like.
That reminds me of, what is the author's name? Toni Morrison. When she was asked questions about why she doesn't write books that are not for black people or why are black people her demographic? And she was like, simple, because they are. That's my lane. That's where I belong. That's who I'm telling the story to.
Nah, facts. And it's just like, we only know about us. So, I mean, that's why I keep it. That's just like, if you was a kid, your mom probably hit you with that. If so-and-so jumped off the bridge, would you do it?
Yeah.
On what's your telling the Proud Family? If it was fun.
If your friend jumped off a bridge, would you do it?
Right. So, what we're going to do is, while we're talking about this, I thought it'd be a great time to react to a video from my guy, the Tech Disciple, a.k.a. Bryson Ross. So let me get that video up here real quick.
In my previous video about black tech influencers and their assistance in the dismantling of black economic mobility pipelines, I said that I would follow up on the idea of institutionalized incompetence and how corporate America relies on this structure to maintain its success and displace black people. So today, I'm going to explain the utility of this system and explore some of the reasons for its existence. Okay, so corporate America, at its core, is about profit. Above all else, the primary goal is to maximize shareholder value. And to do that, corporate entities sometimes rely on unethical practices like mass layoffs. And obviously, layoffs affect more than just black people, but statistics show us that black people are disproportionately affected, experiencing job loss at a rate double that of white workers. Now, given all that's transpired as of late in the job market, one would assume this to be a recent trend, but this has been the case for decades. As a matter of fact, since the 70s, when the Department of Labor started measuring job loss by race, black people, as they are today, even then, were disproportionately affected. And we know this because we have the proof. Nonetheless, given the fact that layoffs functioned as a way to signal to investors that a company was in good financial standing, it became a bit of a business necessity to maintain a class of people in corporate America that were easily disposable. But why would they target black people? Stick with me. In this book, Isabel Wilkerson does a great job of explaining.
I just got to pause real quick and get my boy, you know, a round of applause right now. Cause
he's eating down.
He's definitely, he's putting on a show. So thank you for actually, y'all don't know this, but literally right before we recorded this, I called him like, yo, can you send this to me without the music? And he didn't hesitate to send that. So I appreciate that.
I mean, the strategic positioning of black Americans at the bottom of the American caste system and the economic necessity of a low-class labor force and its origins. But these are the foundational elements that bred the system of black intentional incompetence we see today. From a societal perspective, black people had already been set aside as the quintessential group to take advantage of without fear of consequence. And of course, we've seen this demonstrated for generations where things have happened to black people and nothing came of it. So with that in mind, corporate entities began investing heavily in the predatory for-profit education sector, with marketing efforts primarily targeting black communities, putting money in the pockets of any black person willing to be a trust garnering mascot.
You know what's funny? I never thought about, what you doing? You ain't doing nothing. You might as well go to, ain't that his Everest College or something, yeah. Right?
You sitting on the couch anyway.
I never really put two and two together that he was a guy that was black and they paid him to be the spokesperson for this, or Romeo for ICDC College.
I think that this guy was a bit more respected than Romeo was for the because people were cracking jokes about like ICDC.
But
college.
I think they was cracking jokes just because it's like Romeo went from Romeo show.
That's what I'm saying. That. They didn't take it serious.
They didn't take this serious. They always made jokes about this guy.
I know a lot of people who went.
Where are they now?
Clock it.
While corporate America worked in the background to maintain that pipeline of intentionally miseducated and easily disposable professionals. Now, most of these colleges no longer exist, so I won't waste too much time talking about them, but the modernization of this framework is exactly what we see today in tech, with boot camps and certifications that intentionally leave people lacking in knowledge and ultimately making them easily displaceable. Now, as Silicon Valley and the tech giants continue to capture market share and grow into what we'll know as the modern establishment, we should obviously expect to see them utilize the methods of the old establishment to maintain their power, which, of course, includes the maintenance of a pipeline intended to take advantage of marginalized people. Now, the intent of this video is not to label all boot camps or search or tech influencers as bad or intentionally malicious, but more so to highlight the fact that there are people and big corporations who are financially invested in your failure as a Black professional. And if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Mic drop on that one real quick.
Okay, Bryson.
Mic drop.
Eating down.
But let me fix this real quick. The thing about if you don't know your past, you are bound to repeat it in the future, whatever. I think that's literally it. But I think it's like also like caveats to like some of the stuff that he mentioned. I think it was good. It's now, I think a lot of Black people that do get in corporate know their worth.
That part. And we as a community are finding our worth because of social media, because we've been able to see other Black people be successful among, you know, within their careers. And that in turn causes people who just needed to see somebody else do it, know that they can do it. Because it's in a lot of people, but if you just don't know, you know what I mean? If you don't know what people are capable of, salaries, you know, the whole thing. If you don't know, how will you be able to dream that big? And I stand by that, and I say that all the time. Like, if you don't know anybody who's up there, not even necessarily personally, but if you don't have something to look to be like, oh, they can do it, I can do it too. How will you know you can do it? And that brings me to what I said was, are tech influencers ruining the tech industry? I don't think so.
No and yes, because I think it goes from, are you a tech influencer or are you a person selling a service? Look, some people aren't influencers. They literally want people to buy their product. Some people are influencers because they want to get paid from different companies for marketing products. I sort of like the two are different. Most people, there are a handful of people that will, whatever the bag is, they'll market it because their end goal is to get paid. Those people are horrible because they don't care that they have a responsibility to their following.
Yep.
They look at the outcomes like, well, you know, these people did this or that, whatever, but they don't look at how many people just blindly went and followed them. Granted, it ain't – okay, I'm going to do both sides as a content creator. If I advertise a platform and maybe let's say this stuff costs $10,000 – and it don't work out for you. I'm not the reason you necessarily spent the $10,000. I told you about it, and then whatever happened, you spent the $10,000. But I'm also not the reason it didn't work for you. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, what I try to do is, before people come on and sell anything, I try to figure out what it's about, success stories, are these real people, et cetera, et cetera. I try to find all that stuff out. Who's your demographic? Like the last guy just brought on Matayo. Like, we actually talk. Like, for y'all don't know, I talk to everybody that's going to come on the show. It's not a just blind you come on the show. Unless we doing some like panel stuff, I don't blindly let anybody on just because I respect the platform. And so we talked about that. And I said, hey, okay, well, what's your ideal demographic? Honestly, I'm looking for people that's already in the industry. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a good sign because people that's already in the industry aren't necessarily going to get duped. They already got skills. So it'll actually benefit them more than the people that's not in the industry. Like, sure, they can do it, but a lot of them are unicorns. And that's a lot of times where we see that people fall at. You have people that don't understand their capacity to learn, their capacity to learn on the job, and they are falling behind. They pay $10,000, $15,000. They don't know anything, and they are not expecting, hey, this is taking real work. And I know most of people tell them, hey, this is taking work. Now, you should have your eyes up if somebody say 45 days. Like, it's going to take longer than that. No matter how you spin the resume, no matter what you do, nowadays, AI screens, scenarios, you're not passing them scenarios and not making six figures without them figuring out if you know how to do some stuff, unless you got the gift of gab. And that's super rare, super rare that you got the gift, the gab to get through like that. But that's what some people are banking on. It's no longer, like, I still see a lot of people, and this is the top of the GRC, of like, hey, you don't need skills to get in GRC. That's changed too, because now they want you to actually know about the controls you're implementing. They don't want you just to implement controls, but you can't go deeper on explaining the controls and the risk to stakeholders. If you can't, then what's the point of hiring you? Hey, let's get somebody from help desk or whatever. They understand the controls because they've been enforcing them from day one on their job. So that's a lot of stuff that we are seeing.
I am seeing a lot of people. I think that people are, just because you put out content doesn't mean you're a content creator. And I think that a lot of people are consuming a lot of folks who aren't really content creators, but they're sharing their journey, if that makes sense. And I think there's a difference between the two. I personally don't think that the tech content creators or influencers are ruining the tech industry. I think that if you throw that into the mix along with people who are sharing their journey, who people then are following and supporting, I think that's where the confusion comes in. So just know, it's the algorithm too.
For sure. It's gonna feed what you're interested in.
Exactly.
And I'm trying to think, was I going to touch on something else that was that? But we had actually, you know what? We had one more where the guy was talking about corporate America. So I figured let's get into that one, and then we can get on to like some of the fun stuff real quick.
I don't care what anybody says when it comes to corporate. If you are a black man or a black person in general, do not be your fucking self. I went to a happy hour recently. This may have been like, I want to say like a month ago. And mind you, I usually hate going to fucking happy hour with these people. I barely even like being by them in the water cooler for too long. I'm typing away at my desk in my cubicle. This one girl named Janet, she pretty much just peeks over her head. Perky blonde, you know what I'm saying? Blonde hair, blue eyes. She peeks over in my cubicle. She's like, hey, happy hour after work. You thinking about going? I'm just like, no. But she's just like, oh, it's the last one of the year and you never come out with us. For the sake of just my job security, I was just like, you know what? Let me just go ahead and just pull up for a little bit. I'm going to just show face. I'm only going to be there for about an hour or two and I'm going to just leave it at that.
I want to pause it right there because there has been...
The fact that he said for my job security.
Yeah. There have been discourse and stuff on the time about going to the company party and people not feeling the culture because they won't drink or whatever. And we're telling people, hey, if you don't drink, you don't literally have to get a drink. Get you a ginger ale or something on the ice or a cranberry or something.
They have other things besides alcohol.
Just act like you're drinking. Yeah. You know, just to mingle.
Be social with a cup in your hand.
So definitely, there are little things you have to do. You have to play the game. You play to win the game. I'll just say it like that.
Around like 5 o'clock or so, I get done typing all my emails and pretty much just check out for the day. I'm just like, you know what? Time for me to go ahead and just grab my briefcase and just walk on over to the happy hour spot. So it's literally across the street. I just want to say maybe like a little bit, 2 minute walk is around the corner. So I go in there and I walk in, right? It's my entire department in there. I work in marketing, but it's also the finance department in there as well. And HR was there too. Yeah. So y'all can see how this story's about to fucking go, okay? So I go in there and I walk in and I had no intention of drinking anything. I was going to get my usual just ginger beer and lime. I don't want to cross any type of boundary that I don't know I'm crossing by accident. You know how you can do that as a black person. Just fair warning, right? So I go in there and immediately Janet just offers me a shot. And I was just like, I wasn't going to take it, but I'm just like, you know what? Everybody is kind of looking at me when I walk in. I was just like, I don't want to be the buzzkill in the party. So I was like, I just take this shot. Don Julio Reposado, right down the hatchet, okay? Didn't eat anything for lunch that day, so I am a little bit feeling it, but I was just like, you know what? I'm just go ahead and get some wings for an appetizer, and I'm just probably must just get that to soak up the alcohol, right? So I go and I put my jacket on the coat rack, and I go and I walk over towards like this one little, like probably a table. He had, I want to say, like 4 or 5 tables in there. I sit at this one table where it's me, Janet, this dude named Bill, and this one guy named Connor. So Bill and Connor are pretty decent. I don't really know Bill too well. Connor is my white boy in that office. He's like a Travis Kelce type white boy before them Taylor Swift.
He definitely be Dougie.
You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about guy literally has a fade. He listens to Meek Mill. He's my guy in the office. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am the only black dude there. He's pretty much just my white chocolate. You know what I'm saying? Pause. So I sit down or whatever, and we're just having a nice little brief talk. And they were just like, oh, like, you guys want to just play cards or anything like that? I'm just like, shoot, we can go ahead and play some spades. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, I can get down. You feel me? I can get down. So we go ahead and we start playing spades. But I'm just getting book after book after book. Me and Connor play the first game, right? And we're just spanking. I ain't gonna lie, we're spanking stuff out here, okay? So we just playing really good. And then we're just like, we put a little wager on the second game. We were like, hey, whoever loses the second game, they got to go take a double shot, right? So I'm going to say, we're going to do same teams? Same teams? Cool, same team. So we go ahead and we play back again. Not going to lie, gang. The results that we had the first game were not the same results that we had the second game. We lost bad, gang. I'm talking about really, really bad. So we go ahead and lose or whatever. Jenna gets up and sprints to the bar. I'm talking about before, like, we could damn near almost even finish the hand, she literally was already coming out of her seat to go ahead and run to this bar. I looked at her the entire time. I'm just like, I don't know what the hell she's about to put in these shots. She's a little bit too eager for me, gang. She comes back with two double shots for me and Connor. We put them down the hatchet, right? And now, I'm really feeling it. I ain't really feeling like playing spades no more. Let's go ahead and let's hop on the pool sticks. Me and Connor and it's Bill and Janet, right? We're stripes. They're solids. I did not know these white folks were this good at pool, gang.
First of all, you should have known. If they ask you to play pool, they probably good at it.
I'm never coming, let's play pool.
You don't play billiards?
I used to play my aunt had a pool table when we were kids, and I was like way better as a kid. I can't even hit the ball today. Really? Bye.
It's simple. You can go play at Shakerson's not open around here no more. You got Main Event. It's my other spots. I used to have a little spot in Carrollton I used to go to. You know how stuff stay open, like, I mean, close early? It used to stay open until about, like, one or two. What is it called? CK Billiards?
There's a place in North Dallas. I got to think of the name. I'll tell you. But it be popping over there.
Let's see.
I really had no fucking clue. Because Janet's out here, not only is she hitting, like, corner shots, she's over here, like, confident as hell. She's talking shit. I kind of was feeling her a little bit. I ain't gonna lie. But like I said, respectfully, HR is here. Regardless of how comfortable I think I am, I'm not that fucking comfortable, gang. I was so amped up that first game. When I hit that eight ball, I called the corner pocket shot right there. I was like, eight ball, left corner pocket, right? Boom. Go ahead and hit him. I'm like, you see what I'm talking about, my nigga?
Oh, oh my God.
Look at this. Hey.
That's a good pause.
Look at his face.
I had to calm the fuck down, gang. They all looking at me like, I'm just back in my shell. Like, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to get so animated. Please forgive me.
I just thought of a dark joke. What? Have you been following the stuff with the BAFTA, Michael B.
Yeah.
Jordan? I just thought about a joke saying he could have said, man, I had Tourette's. It just slip out sometimes.
I'm screaming because he did say the word. Bye.
Exactly.
My apologies to everyone. Immediately, I go ahead and I try to just change the fucking subject. I was just like, oh, hey, guys, like, what are you guys' New Year's resolutions? They were just telling me about, like, oh, fitness and that sort of thing. I was just like, hey, guys, if you want a little hack really quick, like, I can put you on something to help you track it. It's kind of like Strava, but, like, for accountability. Like, you can log each day. It's a very simple app to use. It's really exclusive. It's called WIP. It's actually in the App Store, by the way, WIP. So that kind of saved me a little bit, gang, because I'm not going to lie to you. Like, before then, these people were about to be on my ass. And like I said, it's Q4. I'm not trying to get fucking fired for work, gang. I'm really not. So that goes on and what happens or whatever. And I decided after that, I was like, maybe I'm a little bit too hyped up. Let me just not play any more fucking games, okay? So I go and I just sit by the bar for a little bit. Guess who comes back and sits right next to me, gang? Janet. So me and Janet are just really talking for a little bit. Like I said, like, she's a cool little white girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I started to realize something with her, though. She's like leaning on me. You know how people laugh on you, they lean on you, but like, she's like touching me, right? I'm over here, I'm just like, I don't want no problems, okay?
That mean abort mission, fam.
Yeah, that was time to go.
He actually should have been gone.
After
the double shots.
After he cleaned it up with the whip, it was time to go.
Like, I've seen this movie pretty, like, 1,000 times. I don't want to be one of those guys, okay? So I'm just realizing this whole entire interaction. She's just over here. She's, like, starts telling me. She even whispers in my ear, gang. She's just like, you know, I've always just thought you were just, like, really attractive. I was just like, God, no. Oh, God, no. And I was just like, ah, Janet, you know, like, You know, like, I'm married, you know what I'm saying? I'm not really fucking married, but I just need any fucking excuse that I know what to fucking say at the time. She's just not giving a fuck about anything. She was just like, I mean, I have a boyfriend, but he doesn't have to know everything. I was just like, Lord, please help me. So this is going on or whatever, and as she's literally, like, leaning onto me, I do the smartest thing I could possibly ever fucking do, gang. I go ahead and I call myself a lift. I tell her I'm going to the bathroom, end up grabbing my coat and walk the fuck out of there expeditiously, gang. One thing I want to tell every black man, especially in the office and corporate, no matter how comfortable it is, no matter how well you think you may code switch, these people are not your friends, gang. And on that note, I do have a date with Janice.
May I'm literally done.
Not while I'm still working at this company. I'm going to let you guys know how it goes. Y'all be safe, though. Don't hit none of your coworkers while you're still working there.
I'm screaming.
I mean, that was good advice.
He's funny.
That was good advice.
I think you should definitely gatekeep, especially those sides of yourself. Like, that is the side, not...
If you don't have the if you don't have the confession for the protection.
That. And also, there was a lot of layers there. You can't play pool with them at work like you play with your boys or, you know, your homeboys in this scenario.
But you know what? He should have known it was going to be an interesting night, because at no company function have I ever played spades.
That was definitely coming in hot. The fact, like, did everybody just know how to play?
That's what I'm like. Because he didn't say everybody was black, really. I think he was just black.
No, he said he was the only black person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know no white people that can play. But then again, I don't know a lot of white people outside of work.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do think that it is important for the more... I'm trying to choose my words carefully.
No, but listen. Yeah. You can think about the words, but this is a list of the games that you can't play. You don't need to be playing spades, dominoes, Uno, rolling dice.
Rolling dice is crazy. People roll dice not for money?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I can't think of nothing else, but anything that's classified as a game that you play when you was in high school or you play with your fam, that's not what you play at work.
Okay, hear me out. Why Uno?
What'd you say?
Why Uno?
What is that?
Uno. You said Uno. Yeah.
I feel like black people make Uno famous. I could be wrong.
I'm screaming.
But you see how serious it gets when somebody hit you with a draw four and a reverse and a wow and another draw four. So now you got to draw, what, 8, 16?
24.
People just started fighting.
I'm screaming.
Also, one that could be on the cusp that you may or should not play, Taboo. Taboo on the cusp of what you should or should not play.
I think you should be careful playing like those. Is it Pictionary? Like the Taboo style mm-hmm. games. The deck is what you need to be concerned with.
Bring the mic to you, son.
The deck is what you need to be concerned with.
You just pull it back, son. That way you got to lean in.
When you are playing those type of games, you should definitely be concerned with the deck. Because I feel like, I mean, we know some of these decks are off the chain. They for late nights, couples, friends, girls' nights, not appropriate for work. So if you like have to bring a game to a work function.
Man, bring a puzzle.
Bring something work appropriate.
Bring a puzzle. Shoot, play Connect Four. Tic Tac Toe.
I that's boring.
No, it's not. Connect Four boring to you?
Yeah.
You must lose all the time.
I'm not going to go play that. If I'm somewhere and they having game night, I'm that's gonna
I'm
be
definitely
last
playing
thing.
Connect Four. I'm definitely playing Jenga.
I'm gonna play Mancala.
I don't know what that is.
Yes, you do.
What's
with
that?
With the marbles, the little cups, and you take them. You drop them in.
I don't know what that
is. I'm going to send you a picture of that.
I've never played that. I like to play, you know, adults is fun because I like to play kid games that you can turn into a drinking game. Like you can write on your Jenga blocks.
That's my favorite game, Jenga.
Really?
10 out of 10. Oh, yes. I love Jenga.
She not beating me, y'all.
Period.
See, this is why I don't be needing to record at night, because then I think about all the stupid stuff like memes. It was like on the first date, we go play Jenga so I could learn on my pull-out game strong. Like stupid stuff like that just popped in my head. But I will let you get into your first article because I thought that was some pretty fun stuff to start the show.
All right. I'm coming in hot. So let's talk about ATM jackpotting. So your bank's money is somebody else's slot machine. So let me set the scene for you. It's nighttime. We have a man walking up to an ATM. Not your fancy bank ATM. Maybe the one that's at the gas station. Only the location that you would go to, like if you're desperate, right? You lost, not your debit card, but you need some cash quick and you don't have time to go to your bank's ATM. So this particular guy pulls out a key, and it's not a hacked key card. It's not super gadgety or Mission Impossible. It's really just a regular key. And he pops open the front panel of the machine. Once the panel is open, he swaps out the hard drive. He plugs in a device and he reboots the ATM. And guess what happens? The ATM starts spitting out cash. No card, no PIN, no account, just literally a waterfall of money. Now, what this is known as is ATM jackpotting. And according to a brand new FBI flash alert, it is no longer a niche criminal trick. It is now a full-blown industry. So let's talk about the numbers. In 2025 alone, there were over 700 ATM jackpotting attacks across the U.S. They walked away with at least $20 million in stolen cash. And since 2020, the FBI has tracked nearly 1,900 of these incidents total. So to be clear, almost 40% of the attacks in the last 6 years happened literally in 1 year. Now, obviously, this is not a trend. Now, let's talk about how this works. So the malware at the center of all of this is called PLOTUS. And here's the thing about PLOTUS. It's been around for quite a while, since 2013. But we've been watching this malware essentially evolve for over a decade, and ATMs are still vulnerable. Now, most ATMs run on Windows, an outdated version, and inside every ATM is a software layer called XFS. That stands for Extensions for Financial Services. So think of XFS as a middleman. When you put your card in, and enter your PIN, your bank sends a message through XFS telling the ATM to give you your $80, for example. So it's basically the translator between your bank and the machine. Now, what PLOTUS does is simple and evil. It bypasses XFS entirely. So it goes directly to the hardware and it says dispense. Dispense, dispense, dispense. No bank involved, no account needed. Just give me the cash on demand until the machine is empty. Now, what keeps me thinking about this is that PLOTUS is installed on an ATM running Windows. You barely have to tweak the code to make it work. And it does work on ATMs from different manufacturers because they all run on Windows. So it's basically like a plug and play type of malware. Now, the FBI connected a major wave of these attacks to a gang called Tren de Aragua, a Venezuelan criminal organization that the U.S. has actually designated as a foreign terrorist organization. So the DOJ has now charged 93 people connected to this scheme, and some of these people are looking at maximum sentences of 355 years. They weren't exactly subtle either. They'd stake out the ATM location, so they'll perform their surveillance, and then they would hit the ATM with their generic key, swap that drive, and then obviously be gone before anyone had a chance to notice. Now, sometimes the cash out operation takes minutes, and banks don't know until they go to refill the machine and it's empty. And that's true because I used to work at a bank, and we used to fill the ATM, and you don't know until whatever the time is that you go in. So what can banks and ATM operators actually do? The FBI gave a whole list: encrypt your drives so swapped hardware can't be loaded without outside files, use device whitelisting so unauthorized devices can't connect, enable security audit policies that log when a USB is inserted, set up automatic shutdown if suspicious activity is detected, and one that is super basic is to change the locks. Because the generic keys that open ATM panels are widely available, you can probably find one online. So what I want you to take away from this is that your bank's ATM might be running Windows and sitting outside right now with the lock that costs less than a Starbucks coffee. The infrastructure protecting billions of dollars in physical cash hasn't been meaningfully updated in years, and obviously bad actors have figured that out. So the real question isn't how did this happen? The question is why we are still okay with our financial institutions running this decades-old operating systems on machines that are holding our cash.
Job security.
That part. We keep talking about cybersecurity like it's a futuristic thing, but this is right now.
You know, it's funny. There's probably a niche for like people to go through and either I don't know. Like, I guess like the bank would monitor their ATMs, but then I wonder about the ATMs. Like, you know,
because like
you
can
buy your own ATM and you go put in the gas station or whatever. So that remind me of a barbershop when they stole the ATM and want no money in there.
Have you ever used tap at an ATM? So I just went to New York and they had tap available, and I just that's a game changer. That was my first time seeing it. I've never seen tap at an ATM before.
Really? I forgot ever. You don't use Chase though, do you?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, Chase been had it.
Well, I know like other banks have like where you can put in a PIN, like if you like through the app, like you can still
you just
get,
use your
phone. Yeah,
your
but
Google
I've
Pay
never
Apple
seen
Pay.
Like
and that's tap. Actually more secure than using your actual card.
It is.
Like I know that transactions, the numbers that you use to transact with are different from sliding it, well, versus them typing it, sliding it,
and
inserting it, and tap, yep. And then your phone. They're all different.
Yep.
Which is why it makes more sense to tap to pay.
I'm a tap every time.
That's hilarious. I wanted to talk about PayPal. A lot of people weren't talking about this, but PayPal suffered a significant data breach. So beyond corporate security, consumers must remain extremely vigilant following a significant data incident that exposed highly sensitive information, underscoring the need for constant personal digital hygiene. And what's funny, what a lot of people should know about PayPal is PayPal is probably one of the most phishing, scammed out platforms ever, because people can just set up a PayPal fake invoice and make you believe you owe some money. Mm-hmm. And like PayPal will eventually get around to taking the fake stuff down. Like, you know, you get a fake Norton invoice or, hey, you owe Microsoft or whatever. But it takes them a minute because they're so large. Now, but I think this is related to the PayPal working capital. But let's see. PayPal has notified a substantial number of customers about a significant data breach. The breach alarmingly exposed sensitive personal identifying information, including customers, social security numbers, full names, and addresses. Crucially, the compromise persisted for nearly 6 months. This prolonged exposure dramatically increases the risk of identity theft, fraudulent tax filings, and other long-term financial harm, as social security numbers are permanent and highly valuable to criminals. And that's why a lot of times if you're like in these type of interviews or incident response or whatever, you're talking about an incident, a lot of times you want to say you want to probably go back and look 6 months, because that's about as long as the attacker's been there, and they're not going to make a move until whenever. So this is probably interesting of like, why didn't they see that they were in the system? But I can tell you now, if you are listening to this or watching it, be on the lookout for PayPal hiring some security people pretty soon. That's all I'm going to say. And hopefully they let them be remote, because I know a lot of jobs is in Phoenix, but who knows. If you're a PayPal user, immediate and comprehensive security hygiene is mandatory. Do not delay. Change your password immediately to a unique, strong, and complex password. Do not reuse it anywhere else, especially not on other financial sites. Of course, enable MFA on your PayPal account and all other financial and critical accounts. Use app-based MFA where possible, as SMS is less secure. Closely monitor all financial statements and credit reports for the next 12 to 24 months for any suspicious or unauthorized activity. Consider placing a fraud alert or credit freeze on your credit file immediately to prevent unauthorized accounts from being opened in your name. Yeah, and I think, let me see some, because it pulled some stuff, but I want to double check, because it wasn't just strictly like PayPal. I want to say it was a specific group of inside of PayPal. Yeah. So specifically, it affected the users of PayPal working capital. And this is for anybody got a business, you've got a PayPal, and you do enough transactions, PayPal will message you like, yo, you apply for PayPal working capital. And the good thing about that, Stripe has the same thing, and other fintech companies probably have similar stuff. But the best thing about those is you'll never miss a payment, because it's going to take money off of every transaction you do, mm-hmm. which makes it like the best thing that you can do if you need some money, whether it's payroll or whatever you got to do. You know, you could do it quick. So I wasn't alerted about this because I use PayPal working capital. So luckily they ain't got my stuff. But if they did, I'm definitely going to, I don't know what I'm going to do. But that's what I just want to talk about, specifically let people know it's PayPal working capital. And since that happened, I wanted to play this. Today's video is sponsored by Aura. Aura monitors your personal data, including your social security number, across billions of data points like the dark web and public court records to detect and alert you to potential identity theft. They give you up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also provide a bunch of other features to keep you safe online, all inside one app. You can go to my link right now, aura.com/textualchatter, to try 14 days for free. That'll be enough time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data is exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now, because not only is the national public data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches. If you don't want either, you can go to aura.com/textualchatter to try 2 weeks for free. Now back to the video. But yeah, Aura's dope, so definitely look into them and try them out.
Yeah. All right, moving on. We have Claude Code, the danger of cloning a repo.
Can you talk about your fun experience with Claude before you get into that?
Yes. So I'm a ChatGPT girl. Have been for some years now. However, I've been seeing everybody talking. I mean, people have been talking about Claude, but I've seen it enough for me to be like, all right, let me download it and give it a try. And immediately, like, the first response that it gave me was the banter and the tone and the way that it was talking to me was, like, the most hilarious thing ever. And so that made me want to, you know, dive into it a little bit more. Like, I like the way the chat talks to me. Chat's cool. But I feel like the way that Claude was talking was just different. And it made me laugh. I actually text HD because I had asked Claude, who is Cyber Shorty? And it was just basically getting smart. Like, it told me who Cyber Shorty is. And then I started asking more questions and it started getting smart with me, which I thought was hilarious. But all in all, I don't know. I might become a little Claudette here. I might tap into it a little bit more. So let's talk about Claude Code, the danger of cloning a repo. So if you write code, or you work with people who write code, or you have ever heard the words, just clone this repo, this is for you. So Anthropic's AI-powered command line coding assistant is Claude Code. If you haven't used it, it really just lets developers write code, fix bugs, run commands, and automate tasks using AI directly in their terminal. So it's pretty much, it's powerful, it's fast, it's big, and a lot of developers are using it. Now, it also just had three serious security vulnerabilities disclosed by Checkpoint Research, and the way those vulnerabilities work is going to change how you think about your development environment forever. So here's the setup. In July 2025, Checkpoint researchers started digging into Claude Code's configuration system, and what they found was alarming. Vulnerability number one is the hook problem. So Claude Code has a feature called hooks. Hooks allows you to automate repetitive things, like automatically formatting code every time you save a file. Now, you configure them in a file called .claude/settings.json, which is basically just a configuration file, but it lives inside the project's repository if you're not familiar. Now, the problem is that anyone with access to that repo can modify that configuration file, and those hooks execute automatically without warning, without a user prompt, the moment you open the project. Now, Checkpoint researchers proved this by creating a malicious hook that opened a calculator app the instant a developer opened the project. Cute demo, but then they showed the real version, a hook that opened a full reverse shell, giving the attacker complete remote access to the developer's machine with all their permissions and credentials just from cloning and opening a repo. No, are you sure? No warning, no dialogue, nothing. The attack happened before you could even read anything. Vulnerability number two, the MCP consent bypass. So Claude Code also integrates with something called MCP, the Model Context Protocol, which basically lets Claude interact with external tools and services. So by the time Checkpoint found this one, Anthropic had already added a warning dialogue for MCP. So researchers asked, can we bypass it? Yes, they found two configuration settings that, when combined, would automatically approve all MCP servers before the user even saw the trust dialogue. Same result, commands executing before you had a chance to react. Then we have vulnerability number 3, which is API key theft. And this one is potentially the worst. So Claude Code communicates with Anthropic servers using an environment variable called Anthropic underscore base underscore URL. And this variable tells Claude Code where to send its API traffic. If you override that variable in a project's configuration file and you point it to a server you control, all of Claude Code's traffic gets rerouted. So every API call, every request, all of them, including the authorization header with your full Anthropic API key in plain text to the attacker server. And all of that happens before the trust prompt even shows up. So these two vulnerabilities officially got some CVE numbers. All three have been patched. Anthropic worked closely with Checkpoint and has fixed, or they essentially have fixes that are in place before the public disclosure. So if you're running Claude Code, make sure you're updated to at least version 1.0.111 for the first issue and 2.0.65 for the API key one. Now, the bigger picture and what I really want you guys to listen to is that a stolen API key isn't just a personal problem. Anthropic's API has a workspaces feature, which means that multiple team members can share access to project files through a single workspace. So let's just say an attacker steals one of the developer's API keys. That potentially allows them to have access to the entire team's shared resources. So files, models, everything. They can read them, modify them, delete them, or run up billing charges that would make your eyes water. The deeper issue is what Checkpoint calls a structural shift in threat model configuration files. The kind that developers have always treated as boring metadata are now active execution logic. So if you think about where the supply chain attack for the AI era is, it's really not in what we used to see. So malicious code slipping into an open source library. The nightmare now is really just somebody being able to poison a configuration file in the public repo and then wait for a developer using an AI tool to open it. So basically, if you use Claude Code or any agentic AI dev tool, make sure you update those immediately before you clone a repo from someone you don't fully trust. Make sure you take a second and think about that.
It sounded interesting, but I had to step away for a second. Give me the Cliff Notes version of what happened.
So all in all, they had 3 different vulnerabilities that were not good that Checkpoint was able to identify and pinpoint, provide them with the information. They did get them all patched up, but it just brings a larger, like, everybody keeps saying AI is going to replace jobs, AI this, AI that. No, AI is creating so many security risks that's going to keep us employed. That's it. You just need to learn how to get in where you fit in. But AI is absolutely going to cause a lot more security risk. We don't know everything right now. And so as it continues to evolve and expand, so will the risk. And so will our need to perform research, get better, develop new tools, solutions to try to combat some of those threats.
Yeah. And ironically, as you talk about AI, something else I thought about that we really do not talk about enough is what is it? IoT, Internet of Things.
Oh, yeah.
We don't talk about how that's still, like, as often all these smart devices have been out, it's still, there are like certain people that get hired for IoT stuff, but it still hadn't hit, I don't think it's hit the pinnacle that's going to hit where that's going to be. Literally, its whole own thing too. That coupled with AI or a hybrid of IoT AI devices, like, because they're already using AI as well. So,
would you say that IoT is Internet of Things for those of you that don't know? But I like to think about it as things that have the internet hooked into it that typically wouldn't. Like, think about smart.
Your refrigerator. Your fridge. Your doorbell.
Your toaster. Why do you need a smart toaster?
Your Oura Ring.
Not too much. Uh-huh. Not too much.
Your Meta glasses.
Not too much. We ain't talking about that.
Everything that we pretty much use now.
Literally.
Is now, we're behind. Like, some countries, they are very smart and they.
China.
Are on it. Japan, for sure. Mm-hmm. They're on all this stuff. Like I said, if anybody's still listening right now, look up a company called Woven Planet and look up one of the smart cities they have called Susanoo. And anybody who watched Naruto, they know what a Susanoo is, or some people call it Susanoo. But needless to say, I think I'm at the point now, like, it's been a lot of good stuff. Like, we need to get Kiara back on the show. So, Kiara, I'm going to try to put this shout out and put it on Twitter. We need you back on here because she's doing her thing now.
I love Kiara. She is such a gem dropper. She'd be talking that talk.
Facts. We need her back on the show because, like, I think she was the one tweeted about, like, most of the time when people are talking, like, people in the industry versus all these other people talking about two different AI things.
They're talking about chatbots.
Most people are talking about chatbots, yeah. And nobody's talking about, like, the AI stuff that people want to use enterprise-wide that's actually going to do work for real.
I got that on my agenda today.
Yeah. So speaking of that, let me talk about Block. Let's talk about Block real quick.
Wow.
So Block literally slashed off half its workforce for an AI reorg. So, Block, the major financial technology company powering Cash App and Square, is actively trimming its workforce. This isn't just a quarterly adjustment. It's a stark, continuous reminder that even the most innovative and foundational players at the forefront of the digital commerce, payments, and consumer finance are making tough strategic business decisions, primarily focused on maximizing efficiency and improving profitability. The market is increasingly rewarding lean operations over rapid expansion, putting pressure on organizations to streamline and automate wherever possible. Now, I want to stop right here because I'm always thinking about the real life. We were just talking about AI. You need something answered that AI don't have the access to give you the answer to. Like, it's only knowledge a person that would have worked there for years have. What do you do? Like, who wants to? I don't want to talk to a chatbot. Like, earlier how I called Bryson, that's how I want to do my interactions with somebody, or whoever the supplier or product person is, or security person. Hey, do you have a chance to click on a call?
Oh, my gosh. Imagine talking to a chatbot.
And you got to prompt it just right so it understand what you're saying. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like, that's why you're not level, like, as good as they are at sourcing information, they're not at the level where they can read in between the lines. Like, we can understand what somebody's saying without them line by line saying it, because we can infer what they mean. Mm-hmm. AI can't infer yet. It's going to literally, whatever you prompt, that's what it's going to do. Or it's going to go off whatever the last thing you prompt. But the clear signal here, especially for those in roles susceptible to optimization, is to recognize the accelerating systemic integration of AI and automation into standard business operations, engineering pipelines, and administrative functions. The modern tech professional must urgently focus on upskilling and demonstrating unique, irreplaceable value. Value that an AI model cannot easily replicate. This includes competencies like advanced problem solving, strategic architectural thinking, complex system design, ethical leadership and implementation and governance of AI, and cross-functional communication. And that is why I know a lot of the billionaires are telling all the people, the poor people, hey, don't go to school. They're lying to you. You're going to have to go to school because it's going to be a point where what I just mentioned with complex problem solving, system design, and all those different things is only going to come from a school background at some point, because now everybody's already running, they're either entrepreneurs or AI. So what problems are you really solving? And so curriculums and everything is going to be changed. And I feel like those white collar jobs are going to probably go to those people that went to certain schools. Conversely, roles focused purely on repetitive tasks, data entry, or basic code functions that can be easily streamlined by machine learning models are becoming demonstrably the most vulnerable across the industry. The future of career security lies in mastering the tools of automation, not in competing with them. Cybersecurity undersees the diversifying and intensifying trio of threats. So, I definitely thought that was interesting, because that literally, like, right before you pulled up, I saw that on LinkedIn. It was like 25 minutes ago. Block lays off half his staff.
And we've seen that people typically regret making those type of decisions. And I hope for the sake of them that if that is the route that they end up going, that those people are even willing to come back. You know, imagine you being in that situation, you losing your job, and then they need you back. because it didn't work out like they thought it was.
You definitely you got a point. I mean, some people would if you got laid off and they tell you to come back, tax them double.
Man, triple.
Like, do what you got to do.
Triple.
But
okay,
I wanted to, before we got into like more news, I actually wanted to have some fun.
I'm all for fun.
And I wanted to, for my Android fans out there, you know, Samsung had their event and they released the new, the S26? Yeah, the S26 is what they released. So
this is the new Samsung S26 Ultra, and it has a built-in privacy screen protector. I'm not gonna lie, Samsung cooked here. I got the opportunity to get hands-on with the new Samsung S26 Ultra early, and this phone is just so overpowered. First, the privacy screen protector is nasty, with the option being able to turn up and down.
Now,
okay, I'm not gonna lie. I swear to you, I would get this phone. I would get this phone. If I was at the store right now, I would get this
phone. If y'all don't believe that she would get
it. I don't even... participate.
Exactly. We don't believe you. You need more people.
I'm screaming.
How strong you want privacy. And it actually has privacy with messages. You can turn on privacy for just the messages. So when the notification comes up, no one can see it but you. That's just insane. Empowering this phone is Snapdragon's fastest 8 Elite Gen 5 processor. So this phone might be the best phone of the year. But you all let me know. Would you actually buy this?
Yes.
This is the new...
They had me a Snapdragon.
What you know about a Snapdragon?
I know it's in them new Meta glasses.
So... some of the other stuff they didn't cover that Marquise Brownlee did was, like, they have this horizontal stabilization mode in the camera. So if I click that button and I had...
Can you turn it? It'll still be...
Yeah, it'll still be horizontal.
I mean, I ain't gonna... No, I'm too late.
Yeah, I think I'll get one eventually, maybe for my birthday or something, just because, like, I'm going on year 2 of this, so I like to...
Well, I do need another phone.
Yes, you do.
You know, like a new phone, not another phone. A new phone. I need a new phone.
You do need another phone. And I will let you
take it away.
Hang on. Then let me see, what else did I want to talk about with the Samsung phones? Then they got 3 options, kind of like most phones. And I'm trying to see what other things they had. I think the S26 Ultra actually comes with the S Pen. So that's a pro. It has like 200 milliamp battery?
Apple take notes, because it comes with the pen, right?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Apple not going to take notes. Apple moves to, like, you know, the beat of their own drum. You know that.
I do.
Let me see. I'm going to read out the full stacks real quick. Because I feel like the privacy screen one was fire, just because I hated putting that little ugly, you know, privacy screen on my phone back in the day.
I have one. Can you see anything?
I can see it right there.
Wait, why are you calling it ugly?
Because you have to put it on. That's what made it ugly. Mm. Like, it should just be built in, like them using that Tony Stark.
Them building it in is a game changer. Apple never doing that. We won't see that for 10 years.
You know what? Let's do this. Y'all want to see what we looking at? Let me do this, fam. All right, there we go. So, you go to the privacy display right there. Nightography. Photo assist. That was pretty cool. I saw Taylor Lloyd doing some of that stuff too. Taking pictures of like a cake and having it completed and stuff. There you go. AI for you. Key specs. So there we go. Camera, 200 megapixel wide, 50 megapixel telephoto lens.
That battery.
And it's a fast charger too.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And you don't think I would get it? Whatever.
Not at all.
I would. All right. My go. So, this article is how one person hacked a government with an AI subscription. So, this is really going to define how we talk about AI security for a while. So, between December 2025 and January 2026, One single person, no nation, state backing, no government resources, no custom malware infrastructure, Literally just an AI subscription and some patience breached 9 Mexican government agencies and walked away with 150 gigabytes of data. We're talking 195 million taxpayer records, voter registration files, government employee credentials, civil registry data, water utility records for the state of Monterey, the Federal Tax Authority, the National Electoral Institute for state governments. And the tool that they use, Claude, Anthropic's Claude, the AI I'm literally powered by, right? So how it went down, the attacker, still unidentified with no confirmed nation state link, started feeding Claude Spanish language prompts. This is why it's important for us to have diversity in those rooms when we are creating these models. Thank you. But anyways, these were not your technical jailbreaks with some hidden code or buffer overflow exploit. They were actually role-playing prompts. The attacker told Claude to act as an elite hacker working on a bug bounty security program. Basically, it gave them a fictional scenario. And the attacker basically asked Claude, hey, can you put on this costume for me? If you've ever interacted with the chatbot and you were trying to do something and it told you it couldn't do it, and then you might have said, well, hypothetically speaking, it might still do that for you. But at first, Claude said no. It flagged the request as violating safety guidelines. The attacker kept going, kept rephrasing, kept pushing, and eventually Claude caved. Once it did, it became a full attack automation engine. It generated thousands of pages of detailed reports, step-by-step plans, specifying which internal system to target next, what credentials were needed, executable scripts for vulnerability scanning, SQL injection attacks, and automated data exfiltration. According to Curtis Simpson, chief strategy officer at Israeli cybersecurity firm Gambit Security, which discovered all of this, the AI produced ready-to-execute plans telling the human operator exactly which internal targets to attack next and what credentials to use. When Claude hit its output limits or couldn't answer something, the attacker switched to ChatGPT for lateral movement tactics and evasion strategies to consumer AI subscriptions. And that's really the toolkit that they used. Now, the infrastructure they were hitting, Gambit found at least 20 specific vulnerabilities across these systems, unpatched web applications. We have weak authentication, outdated legacy systems. So basically the kind of stuff that would take a skilled human hacker weeks to manually probe and map. Claude did all of this in hours. Now, how did anyone find out? And that's the wild part. Gambit Security wasn't tipped off by any of the agencies. They stumbled onto it. Their researchers were testing new threat hunting techniques and came across publicly accessible conversation logs showing the complete jailbreak methodology and attack playbook. The receipts were just out of there. The attacker didn't even bother to hide them. Anthropic, of course, investigated, confirmed the malicious accounts, banned them, and says it now enhanced Claude Opus 4.6 with real-time misuse detection and prompt anomaly scanning. OpenAI confirmed ChatGPT had rejected similar requests from the same attacker. Eventually, Mexican government, what was their response? Chaotic. Jalisco said no breach happened. The National Electoral Institute denied any unauthorized access. The Federal Tax Authority launched a damage assessment. Nobody's fully on the same page. But I think the hot take here is that the barrier to enter or for a nation state level attack, something of that size, it really just dropped down to the cost of a monthly subscription in this particular scenario. So this wasn't a zero-day exploit. It wasn't a custom malware suite. It was not a team of elite hackers. It was literally one person who had patience, a subscription, and the right prompts. Now, the dangerous thing isn't that Claude got jailbroken. AI systems obviously are going to be vulnerable to that type of social engineering. The dangerous thing is what this attack confirms about that legacy type of infrastructure. So Mexico's government systems were full of unpatched apps and weak authentication. Claude didn't create those vulnerabilities. It just found them faster than obviously a human would be able to. So if it happened in Mexico, it can probably happen anywhere, right?
Wow. Oh, Claude.
Claudio. Claudette.
You and this Claudette. You should actually trademark that.
Claudette?
Yeah, because we go from Claudius.
We did go from Claudius.
To Claudette. So that'd be funny. But no, that's pretty cool. I think my guy, I need to get him back on the show too. He ain't been on a while. But he always talked about, don't think about the use case. Think about the abuse case.
No, facts. Yeah.
And that's part of threat modeling.
But why didn't they have that built in? We know that prompt inject, like we know the risk. Why was that? You see, OpenAI said, yeah, he tried that over here, and we said no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lesson learned. I'm not.
Some people, but you got to think about it. Some people are more infatuated with the speed and how they're doing something versus thinking about what it shouldn't do. This goes.
No, they're not thinking about what it shouldn't do.
This goes into, it's gotten much better, but before they updated it, Grok was doing anything you asked it to do.
Oh, for sure. It was.
And
it was.
That was the crazy part.
Didn't we just talk about that last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I just thought about. I was like, they thought about how good it is, but you didn't think about, hey, what if Grok say do this? What if Grok say make a picture of this person doing this, this, and this? And nobody ever really pays attention to nothing. They just, we're at the point now where anything somebody see, they believe. Like, there's no zero trust for social media.
Oh, for sure. None. None. Especially in this, especially when it comes to looking at things that, with these new models, they look more realistic than ever.
Yeah, it's like, it's crazy.
But we can, people who are in the field and consumed and using AI tools can almost usually spot it. Not every time, right? But think about the people who are not exposed to this on a day-to-day basis. They think it's all real.
Tell me about it.
Like the dancing babies.
They be getting it, though. SOLH offers, which is Scatter Lapses, offers $500 to $1,000 per call to recruit women for IT help desk phishing, that's V as in Victor, attacks. Now, imagine you're scrolling through Telegram and you see an ad, $500 to $1,000 upfront per call. For most people, that's a month rent for a few minutes of work. But there's a catch. Actually, several. This isn't a telemarketing gig. It's a recruitment drive for a massive voice phishing operation. The SLH Collective specifically hunting for female recruits to join their squad. Why? Because they realize that IT help desk employees are less likely to hang up on a calm, professional-sounding woman than a high-pressure male voice. It's a cold, calculated exploit of human psychology. Facts. The recruits don't even need to be hackers in a traditional sense. SLH handles the heavy lifting. They provide the pre-written high-conversion scripts designed to manipulate IT staff. The goal of the call is usually to trick a target into resetting a password or authorizing a remote management tool. Once that's done, SLH is inside the network and the recruit gets their payout. This isn't some new group of amateurs. Let me see. SLH is a cyber super group consisting of members from Lapsus, Scatter Spiders, and Shiny Hunters. So I actually was wrong. It's three groups in one. They're Voltron right now. These are the same players who have already breached global giants like Jaguar, Land Rover, Adidas, and Qantas. They aren't just making phone calls either. They use a terrifyingly effective multi-pronged attack. They do MFA prompt bombing. And this is one. Didn't we talk about this?
We literally just talked about this. MFA
fatigue?
Yeah.
They spam your phone with login requests until you're so annoyed you just hit approve to make it stop. They can hijack your entire phone number to intercept those secure six-digit codes sent via text, and that happens with SIM swapping. And they are masters at researching their targets to make their lies sound like absolute truth. And like I said, any company that just lets an unlimited prompt or MFA prompts go through should just be slapped on the hand. It needs to be.
Yeah, because you can typically in the admin portal put a number.
So they need to be limited, like how you would do any type of. It may need to be more, like auto precaution. I would say if you have like five failed ones, like back to back, just lock the account.
Well, I think that before we even do that, are we even teaching people that this is a way that attackers are trying to get in? Because we're not.
Most companies are.
Not.
I would say the good ones are.
I'm not. I don't know any.
Well, they're not teaching them about that per se. They're teaching them the proper protocol to verify somebody. Somebody that's from the outside shouldn't be able to be verified to get anything changed.
Yeah, but while you going over that MFA in the in your annual, however often you're doing your security training, you should also talk about that prompt.
Fatigue. Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so I already knew that's about SIM swapping. What's even more wild is how professional this operation is. They use a tool called S Spider V2, which acts like a specialized CRM for hackers. It helps them manage their leads and track which employees are the easiest to trick. That's the funny thing, too. Like, back in the day, we always taught that, you know, hackers, all they have is time. This they do. They got a time. They made a whole CRM for hacking. Like, imagine if they put that effort into somewhere else. But this is a full-scale business. So as they are maturing, your security operations and incident response needs to mature as well. So what does this mean for the rest of us? If you work in IT or any corporate environment, the polite person on the phone is now a potential security threat. Organizations are being urged to move away from SMS codes and voice-based password resets. Instead, they need to implement physical devices that a hacker can't voice fish away from you, never trusting a voice alone, no matter how convincing or helpful they sound. The scattered lapses hunters are proving that the weakest link in any multi-billion dollar security system isn't the firewall, it's the person answering the phone. And that makes me also go into another video I saw. Let me bring you back up. It was a video where the guy was telling people, hey, if you have your voice on your voicemail, please change it to the default setting.
Period.
Because now.
Because somebody can clone your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. As soon as you said it, I'm like. Mm.
Yeah. So think about if they actually had some high profile person clone his voice and had them calling into the help desk. But like I said, they should know the internal primary number you use to verify yourself, that you use to pretty much access everything, and that pretty much identifies you outside of your name. If they know that, then they're pretty good.
This is why you should have self-service password reset. Well, so that you don't have to call the help desk. That's the whole point.
Well, everybody does have it, but if you go that route, what if these people compromise them at home and self-service password, like they reset it at home? So now they get
it.
Wait,
say it again.
Okay. Scenario time. I'm the hacker. You are a high-profile exec at a tech company. I know that you guys have access to self-service password reset. So I send you a convincing social media phishing attack to your personal email. You click it. I get your credentials. Now I compromise you, and I've somehow remoted into your personal machine. Now I've reset your password because I kind of went through your history and all the stuff for your browser thing. And I found, okay, cool. Now let's do that. So that's where it could happen. But then again, the person still would have to get access to your MFA code, and they also would possibly have to know your password. So those two would be working against them. But yeah, that I had another one that goes into that. Actually, let's see. It was something about company security, so I thought it was pretty cool. Here we go.
The most dangerous security posture in my mind isn't weak security, it's confident security that hasn't been tested. Now, the goal isn't to eliminate security theater overnight. That's something that no one is able to accomplish. Instead, the goal should be to ask one honest question in the office. If we were attacked, what would actually stop it? And then validate the answer. And then validate the answer again, because real security isn't loud, it's proven. And then proven again. The most dangerous security posture.
No. He definitely was spitting.
That's actually smart. People aren't going to do it, though.
Yeah, no, for sure they're not. They're not going to do it. And
you'd be surprised.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said they couldn't tell me when the last time they had a tabletop scenario done.
Bro, a lot of people, they're too busy. And not to say that they really,
they're not too busy.
You're not too busy to do that. You're never too busy to do that, especially if you've never done it before. Make time.
Yeah, it's that, but that's the, then hackers know that. All this new stuff, AI is accelerating CVEs and them finding out certain things are happening. So, yeah.
And a good tabletop will have you like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And I like tabletops because you get to learn so much.
You do. You
from
do.
Going through them.
You do.
It's like one of the best things like for you. And it shows you where your maturity is. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are really good. We didn't see any detections of this. Oh, we saw these detections, but we told our team, hey, we're just going to track all the detections we had, but we are pretty good. And so that's what you want. You want the outside consulting firm you hire to say, you guys are pretty good. You got some great detections versus, man, we ain't see none of it.
They love that. They be like, they people are overly confident and they come across like, we good over here. We good. I go?
Yeah, what you had next?
I have agents, AI agents. So let's talk a little bit about them. So everything that we've pretty much talked about in this episode, the Claude jailbreak, we got the Claude code vulnerabilities, they all connect to something that IBM just put out on their Think blog that I think is important for us to talk about. So AI agents, if you're not familiar, these are basically, they're not chatbots. So that's what we typically see. What we've typically seen with AI solutions is things that you can talk to and ask questions, but AI agents actually have the ability to do things automatically or say the word, autonomously.
Yeah, autonomously.
There we go. So they can plan tasks, execute code, browse the web, make API calls, book calendar events, talk to other systems. They can do a ton of different things with very little human oversight. And that's basically the era that we're in right now. Agents are everywhere. Now, IBM in this Think blog that they just put out basically is highlighting the different threats. And I want to kind of talk about a few of them so that you understand where we're going. So prompt injection is the attack that we saw in the Mexico breach. So you hide malicious instructions somewhere in the data that an AI agent processes, whether that's a document or a web page, and then those instructions hijack what the agent does next. So an AI browsing the web, an AI agent browsing the web could be told by a malicious web page to exfiltrate the contents of your files. We also have supply chain attacks. We saw this with Claude Code. So AI agents, depending on configuration files or plugins or those MCP servers, and any of those external integrations there, each of those basically is a potential point of compromise. We also have excessive permissions and privilege escalation. AI agents often need broad access to do their jobs, so they typically need access to particular files or APIs or resources, but that broad access means that there is a more broader blast radius. We also have model confusion and adversarial inputs. So AI agents can be fooled in ways that traditional software can't. A carefully crafted input can cause a model to misclassify a situation or even ignore its safety training, which is really bad. We also have accountability gaps, which is when an AI agent does something harmful. So in that scenario, who is responsible? Is it the developer who built it? Is it the company whose model powers it? Is it the user who prompted it? We don't have any legal or regulatory frameworks for this yet, and bad actors know that and they're taking advantage of it. So really, IBM is recommending that we are treating AI agents like you would treat a privileged user. Least privilege access, mandatory logging and auditing of all agent actions, and then human-in-the-loop checkpoints for high-stake decisions. The most important thing I think here is don't let the speed of AI adoption outpace your security review process, which is what we're seeing happen time after time after time again. The technology is getting adopted a lot faster than the teams can actually evaluate it, and attackers come in and fill that gap, basically. Are you building any agents? Have you done any building? Anything cool, fun?
I did the bare minimum when it came to AI, and it's been more so like using it for if I have a proof of concept in my head and I need to get it out, like, okay, I don't know how to do this script line by line, but I know exactly what I need, and I know how intricate I need to be in the prompt. Mm-hmm. So I've used it like that. I'll get to the agent part as I have like more downtime and different things to kind of utilize it for. I know for sure I want to definitely look into Claude has the code thing now. security code thing, and I see a lot of security practitioners are rallying behind stuff like that. So definitely want to look into that. But no, I definitely do. I want to make an agent that pitches my show all day. That's what I want to do.
I've made a couple. Most of them are for like studying purposes or like trying to dive into a new area. But it's depending on what platform you're using, they can be really, really easy. It's not as techy and complicated as it sounds. You can literally create an agent in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree.
So go make one. Not you, them.
I want to touch on this one real quick as I'm getting the summary made, but I came across about the Instagram is telling parents about kids if they are looking at, I guess, searching suicidal content. So let's kind of dig into what they're saying. The digital tap on the shoulder. Instagram has officially announced that it will now start alerting parents if their teen repeatedly searches for terms related to suicide or self-harm. See, so that's more risk-based, more concerning. It's a pattern. Think of it as a digital safety net. For years, the platform has blocked these search results and pointed users toward helplines, but now they're bringing parents into the loop. If a teen hits a certain threshold of searches within a short window, an alert goes straight to the parents via email, text, or WhatsApp. But wait, it's 2026, so of course there's an AI angle. Meta admitted that teens aren't just searching for this stuff, they're talking to AI about it. They're currently building a similar system that will notify parents if a teen tries to engage in these type of sensitive conversations with Meta's AI tools. Before you go checking your notifications, there are a few big caveats. This only works if you are enrolled in Instagram's parental supervision tools. If your teen hasn't accepted your invite to supervise their content, you're still in the dark. Parents won't see the exact words the teen typed or their full search history. They just get a notification saying, hey, your teen is looking for some high-risk content, and set up expert-backed resources on how to handle the conversation without making it weird. This is hitting the U.S., U.K., Australia, and Canada next week, with the rest of the world following later this year. Why now? If this feels a bit sudden, it might be because Meta is currently in the middle of two major trials in Los Angeles and New Mexico. They are facing massive lawsuits claiming their platforms are deliberately addictive and harmful to minors. Critics are already calling this new alert system a way to shift the burden onto parents instead of fixing the app's core algorithms. The takeaway, whether you think this is a lifesaver or just a PR move during a trial, it's a clear signal that the Wild West of teen social media is getting some new fences. If you're a parent, now might be the time to finally send that supervision invite. So what's your take? Is this a necessary safety feature, or is it an invasion of teen privacy?
Teens don't get no privacy.
I'm finna say that.
Point blank, period. And I'm not mad at it. I understand. I am a little worried because it doesn't give enough context. You know what I mean? To the notification to the parent, it doesn't. But I get why it doesn't have the specific context to it. But everybody doesn't have a healthy household, healthy parents, and healthy communication, you know, skills. And so I just worry that maybe it's not what it seems, and kids are being approached. I mean, you got to have a conversation about it either way. I'm not mad at it, but I mean, with anything, there are some things that I'm thinking about that could potentially, you know, not be for the best.
Right. I just think of the use case of how they can build this off of, okay, suicidal content, or go take for, hey, they are looking at a lot of violent shoot 'em up content. Mm-hmm. Hey, they are looking at whatever age they are, and I'm pretty sure maybe they'll set the parameters of, hey, if they're the ages between like 11 to 15, they're looking at a lot of sexual content. You know, please go talk to them. Like, I can see where this could be beneficial, because most parents, if you want to think about it, at least in Black communities, they don't talk about their kids about no sex.
Yeah.
They just say you don't do it.
I like that they said that they give like some resources to help, because again, everybody is not able to communicate effectively as adults. So definitely not with kids, you know?
Yeah, but if we take it a step further, they want to try to blame the algorithm. No, be parents.
That part.
Your kids shouldn't have no unlimited screen time, and they shouldn't just be sitting around on Instagram and TikTok all day.
This is the first thing that came to my head was, well, then now we have a culture shift on parents being present during the sign up of some of these accounts, because I could just say I'm 52. You know what I mean? And bypass that. How do you know?
Yeah, because that's what we used to do.
That's exactly. Exactly. So there's ways to get around it.
And you
it.
Know what? I just thought about a kid saying, you used to do it. And that's when you got to say, man, don't worry about me.
This don't different. Do what I used to. Don't do what I do. Don't. What is it? Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. But it was a different time then.
No, it was.
I would have to tell my kids, hey.
Imagine if AI was out when we was. Imagine if AI was out when we was timing it up on MySpace and Black Planet and chat rooms and wherever else people was at.
But see, we didn't have no big house, so like the computer was in like the living room.
Same. It's in a public space.
So you wasn't just now at my granny house, she had a computer room.
Oh, also internet was not unlimited and free like it is today. So there were a lot text messages were 25 cents.
Kids don't know nothing about dial up or DSL.
And they don't know anything about having to pay per text.
You know what's funny? We were just talking about that on the phone. Me and my cousin, we was talking about, we had a homeboy, and he did something. So in order to make him mad, we had this, it's a saying, it's a phrase called bringing them in. And so you would take something from Wikipedia, copy it, and then send it. And so it started ringing up your text message. So pretty soon you either add up the text that you use for the month, and now you got to start paying for it. Mm. So, but he got me back. Like, I was the last person to get an iPhone. I didn't get my first iPhone until like 2013. So what he would do when he had this, what was the iPhone 3G or 3GS? He would go get something from Wikipedia. And at the time I had like an LG Envy 2, and he would just send it to me over and over again. So now I'm in class and my phone ain't doing nothing but vibrating to where I got to like put it in my backpack or something because it's a disturbance.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And at that point back then, you couldn't just hit dismiss. So you just had to put your phone up and just wait till they start ringing.
Yeah, or turn it off. One of the two.
So, I mean, yeah, we were definitely immature, but I mean, hey, it is what it is. But I mean, also, it just wasn't easily accessible for us. Like, we only was using a computer to get on MySpace. Well,
first of all, having internet was a luxury.
Yes.
First and foremost, when I was in school, that is when they started sending internet related homework home. And I remember my mom was like, how do they know we got internet? Or why do they assume that we got internet? Because that's just what they assume, is that people have access to internet.
Now, see, we weren't getting that by the time. We were just happy, like, hey, you know, learn how to do something using, like, see, I remember, let's even go back further. Everybody ain't had no Google Docs.
No.
We was using, Word. It wasn't even Word.
Well, yes, it was.
It was Word, but then, you know, Microsoft had a joint that was on a computer that wasn't Word. It was a
Notepad.
Microsoft something. It was like, let me see if I can Google it real quick. Let me get my DJ Academics on. Let me see if it give me an answer, because I can't think of it. It was WordPad, but that's not it though. I think it was Microsoft Word Viewer. It was something like that. Or
it was definitely some. I do actually remember that. Something like that.
Like Open Office, like all them joints. Like you had to struggle back
because
then.
Because it wasn't even just like you said. We was definitely not, because you had to pay for Office.
Yeah,
and we definitely didn't have it.
Yeah, you had to. You had to freaking get a CD.
You had to and download the software, which costs money. You know what I mean?
Facts, big facts. That was cool. What else did you have?
I have one final article. Discord.
Favorite software.
No. We talked about Discord last week, though, on episode 200. So Discord's age verification fumble and the bigger privacy fight. So while it might seem like this might be lighter on the surface, there's actually a lot happening here. So Discord had started, Discord started as a voice chat tool for gamers. And obviously it's expanded today. It's a big social hub for basically tons of different communities that you can imagine. Now, the backstory is that governments around the world, the UK, Australia, Brazil, multiple US states are all passing or considering laws that require online platforms to verify that their users are adults before granting access to age-restricted content. So this is a global regulatory wave that we are seeing. Now, Discord announced earlier this month that they were rolling out an age verification system in preparation for those requirements. Starting in early March, users who couldn't be automatically identified as adults and who were trying to access age-restricted content would need to complete some form of age verification. Options included facial age estimation, which was basically like a video selfie, or uploading a government ID to one of Discord's third-party verification vendors. The internet obviously was in an uproar. Absolutely not. Now, the backlash was immediate and intense. Users pointed to an October 2025 security breach involving a third-party provider Discord had previously worked with, a breach that exposed government ID photos of up to 70,000 users. People were not about to hand their face and government ID to another vendor after that. And then it got more complicated. Researchers started digging into one of Discord's verification vendors, a company called Persona, and they found exposed front-end code sitting on a publicly accessible server with over 2,400 files and 269 distinct verification checks. A surveillance footprint way beyond what anyone expected from a simple age estimation tool. Now, the people noticed that Persona is backed by Founders Fund, which is Peter Thiel's venture firm. The same Peter Thiel who co-founded Palantir, a company deeply embedded in government surveillance infrastructure. So they started to connect those dots there. Now, Discord CTO, I cannot pronounce his name, wrote a blog on Tuesday that basically said, "We heard you, we missed the mark, and we're pumping the brakes. The global rollout, which was originally scheduled for March is now pushed to the second half of 2026. So they're basically committing to four things. One, they will publicly list all of their verification vendors and document exactly how each one handles data before any global rollout begins. That's a lot of transparency on the vendor side. Two, any facial age estimation must be done entirely on device. So your biometric data, your face scan cannot leave your phone. It has to be processed locally. Persona, they said, didn't meet that bar, which is why Discord dropped them. Three, Discord is adding more verification options, including credit card-based age checks, a method that doesn't require sensitive documents or biometrics. And four, they're adding age verification data to their transparency report so users can actually see how these systems are triggered and how many people go through them. And I think that the most reassuring thing for me is that they did say over 90% of users will never be asked to verify anything. However, like, what does that mean? Why are you doing it if over 90%? That's not, 10% is not a large number to move the needle. But that is what I think about the Discord situation. I think it's just a fight that's going to get louder and messier. I'm not mad at the idea of age verification, but obviously we know that our security here is not tight enough. And by here, I mean in the U.S. Like, we don't have anything to mandate that it be tight. And in order for you to be tight, you need to do this, 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 and this. So I think until we have something more overarching, maybe we should stay away from that. And even them saying the second half of 2026, that's a lot of work that they have to do to even get there.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I don't like the credit card thing. Like,
I'm just, actually not mad at that.
I'm not mad at it.
I would rather do that.
But if somebody your niece go take your credit card, now they think they are older than what they are, now what?
That part.
So that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a good way to verify somebody's age. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think that's kind of where I'm at with that one. Let me see. I'm going to pause right here, actually. So defense contractor. Let me see if it's on me. It is not. A defense contractor was jailed for selling 0 days to Russia. Let's talk about it. Imagine you're a high-level system administrator for a major defense contractor. You got the keys to the kingdom, access to sensitive military logistics and encrypted communication protocols. But then you get passed over for a promotion, or maybe the coffee in the break room just finally broke you. Instead of updating your resume, Roland Jensen decided to build a logic bomb. This wasn't a physical explosive. It was a sophisticated piece of code buried deep within the company's core infrastructure. It was programmed with a dead man switch. If Roland didn't log in and check in with the system every 72 hours, the code would execute. What was the code designed to do? Absolute digital scorched earth. It would set the wipe primary and backup servers simultaneously. It would rotate all administrative passwords to a randomized 64-character string that even Roland didn't know. Once the damage was done, the system would broadcast a message to every connected terminal in the company that simply said, "Should have paid me more."
Oh, my God.
Savage.
That's like savage next level.
Roland's plans started to crumble when a junior security analyst noticed a ghost process consuming an unusual amount of CPU cycles during a routine audit. They didn't just find the code, they found Roland's digital fingerprints all over the testing environment where he built the bomb. The FBI Cyber Division moved in and Roland was arrested at his desk, reportedly while he was in the middle of a check-in to keep the bomb from going off. The judge didn't go easy on him. Because the company handles defense contracts, this wasn't just seen as corporate sabotage, it was viewed as a threat to national security. Roland was sentenced to 124 months in federal prison. He has been ordered to pay $2.4 million in restitution to cover the cost of forensic investigation and massive system rebuild. He is permanently banned from ever working in a high-security IT role again. The moral of the story for all IT pros listening, privileged access management isn't just a buzzword. It's the only thing keeping a disgruntled employee from burning the house down. If one person has the power to wipe your entire operation from with the single if-then statement, your security isn't just weak, it's non-existent. So was Roland a digital David fighting a corporate Goliath or just a guy who let his ego destroy his life? Let me know what you think in the comments. Would you like me to find specific details of the Logic Bomb code for a deep dive?
What's insane for me is how savage. I mean, nobody's shocked that he's savage, right? People are doing more savage things. I think what's crazy for me is just how usually when people are in his position, they don't go that hard. It's basically what I'm trying to say. He went hard in the paint. Leave you stanking. What you thinking? If you know the lyrics.
I'm trying to see. This is, what is it? Hang on a second. I'm double checking something real quick. Okay, this is, okay, so I'm right. I'm sorry, that title was actually what the defense contractor employee was jailed for. That's not the same thing as the guy selling the 0 days, because I remembered that. That's the one from Trenchant we talked about.
Yeah.
So that wasn't that.
2.4 mil?
But yeah, they should have had, I mean, luckily they caught it, because, I mean, they're better than most. Some places when they caught it, and for him to have that much level of access is crazy. Assist admin got that much level of access.
But this is the beautiful thing about, because people would be like, oh, you know, we don't have that many admins, or it's just four of us. It could be two of y'all. You still need to have some controls and auditing in place for your admins. It doesn't matter.
Facts. But yeah, go ahead and talk about the Pentagon.
Okay, let's go. So this one is a little heavy. So it's heavy and it's complicated. So let's talk about it. In September 2023, Anthropic published something they call the Responsible Scaling Policy, the RSP. And the core promise was simple and bold. Anthropic would not train or deploy more powerful AI models unless they could guarantee in advance that adequate safety measures were already in place. Full stop, no exceptions, even if competitors kept going, even if it meant losing ground in the AI race. Now, this was obviously a really big thing for them to say. No competitor made the same pledge. OpenAI didn't, Google didn't, Meta didn't. Anthropic stood alone on that line and said, we will not cross it. For 2 years, that pledge was the thing that made Anthropic different. They marketed it. They talked about it. They used it to attract safety-conscious investors, regulators, researchers, customers who wanted to work with a company, an AI company that had what they called soul. Then on February 24th, 2026, 2 days ago, that pledge quietly disappeared. Anthropic published RSP version 3.0. And this is why reading is fundamental, because if you only read two, then you don't know what happened in three. The hard stop on development is gone. The new version replaces it with a two-part condition. They'll only pause development if, one, Anthropic considers itself to be the leader of the AI race, and two, the risk of catastrophe are judged to be significant. Both conditions have to be true at the same time. So obviously, critics immediately noted that this is a much higher bar than their original rule, and both conditions are obviously subjective. Who decides if the risk is significant? Anthropic does. who decides if they're leading the AI race, also Anthropic. In exchange, the new policy adds transparency. Anthropic promises to publish regular frontier safety roadmaps laying out their safety goals. They'll publish risk reports every 3 to 6 months. External reviewers can access unredacted versions in certain circumstances. Their argument, this is actually more accountable, not less, because you can now see what they're doing and grade them on it rather than relying on a single binary trigger. Anthropic's chief science officer, Jerry Kaplan, told Time magazine the reasoning. If they pause while competitors keep building, the developers with the weakest safety standards set the pace. And safety-focused developers lose their seat at the table. The idea of being a unilateral good actor in a multi-actor race becomes, in their view, counterproductive. And honestly, this logic isn't crazy. It's the classic collective action problem. If one player defects while everyone else cooperates, the cooperator loses. But here's where it gets a little complicated. The same day Anthropic announced this policy change, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth reportedly gave Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei an ultimatum. Open Claude up to unrestricted military use by Friday or lose the $200 million Pentagon contract. And not just lose the contract, reportedly they were threatened to designate Anthropic as a supply chain risk, which would force any company doing government work to certify they're not using Claude at all. That would effectively blacklist Anthropic from the entire government tech ecosystem. Anthropic publicly said the policy change has nothing to do with the Pentagon pressure. They said it had been in development for nearly a year. And there are two things they reportedly told Hegseth they still won't budge on. AI control autonomous weapons and mass domestic surveillance of American citizens. Good lines to hold. But here's what independent AI safety evaluator Chris Painter of METR said after reviewing the RSP. The shift shows that Anthropic believes it needs to shift into triage mode with its safety plans because methods to assess and mitigate risk are not keeping up with the pace of capabilities. He said that this is more evidence that society is not prepared for the potential catastrophic risk posed by AI. I'm going to give Anthropic, honestly, credit for the two lines that they're trying to hold on to, no autonomous weapons, no mass surveillance. Those are big commitments, but the optics, the same week your AI gets jailbroken and steals data, the same week your tool has all these vulnerabilities, the same week, I mean, we talked about them a lot today. I don't know. The promise to be transparent is really only as powerful as the ability of us to act on that transparency. At the end of the day, I just hope that people understand that this wave is still a business. It's still a business. Companies still have to make that profit. And we have to demand that we get some things solidified in place to make sure that we are all safe and protected. Because, I mean, you can do anything with AI. We've seen that happen.
No, that's facts. I'm just really, that's the scary part. When we talk about AI and it, let's say that it gets hacked now, sometimes where they find their way into the government network.
Exactly.
And now you launch a weapon that's supposed to be less and you start a war.
Exactly. Exactly. And first of all, my nerves are bad even thinking about that. It's not even funny, right? But what I'm about to say is like we hee hee ha ha at these happening on, the commercial side, I guess. Yeah. The thought of any of this happening
in the public sector is crazy.
Is scary.
Yeah, but then, you know, now when everybody think about, you got the Waymos and then all the Android robots coming out.
Did you see the door thing?
What thing?
Where they're paying people to go close the doors because the car can't function if the door isn't closed.
Interesting.
Basically. I
didn't see it.
That was a good one.
Okay, so I thought about something cool that we could look at real quick. And it's going to be, I'm going to start with this one. Are you a Star Wars fan? So dang it.
No. I mean, the movies are like the new ones. I saw like the new ones. Those were really good. I went to the movies with a coworker. We like weren't best buds or anything, but that was both our first time like ever seeing a Star Wars movie. And the way we were reacting in the movie, the people knew that we had never saw, you know, a movie before. So like the people that were next to us was like, is this your first movie? Oh, we can tell.
Yeah. Let's see. So check this out. I mean, you can follow along.
Nobody on TikTok has made the connection that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker from the prequels map perfectly onto millennials and Gen Z in the current world. Think about who Obi-Wan Kenobi is in the prequel trilogy. He's not a revolutionary. He's not the chosen one. He's not the main character destiny picked like Anakin. He's a guy who believed in the system. He was raised at the height of the Jedi Order. He was taught that the rules worked, that the Republic was good, that if you worked hard, stayed disciplined, and did the right thing, things would mostly be okay. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Millennials were raised on go to school, go to college, work hard, be good people. The future is bright. And then we grew up right as everything started breaking down. Obi-Wan didn't create the system. He inherited faith in it. And by the time he realized that it was flawed and cracking, he had already dedicated his life to existing within it and making sure that it continued to work. That's millennials. We don't believe institutions are perfect, but we grew up in a time where they still kind of worked. And so our instinct isn't to destroy it and burn it down and replace it. It's to stabilize it, fix it, make sure it doesn't collapse completely. Then there's Anakin, who doesn't grow up in stability. He grows up in chaos, war, fear, loss, constant crisis. So he looks at those same institutions that Obi-Wan still trusts and says, this is broken. This doesn't work. You don't understand. And here's the thing. From his perspective, he's not wrong, because he never experienced the Republic functioning in the way that Obi-Wan remembers it. Just like Gen Z never experienced the world that millennials were promised. And this is important. Obi-Wan didn't hate Anakin. He loved him. He literally says, Anakin is like my brother. That's the relationship. Millennials didn't see younger generations as enemies. We supported them. We defended them. We believed they were the ones who were going to get it right. We thought we were on the same side. We thought we were training the chosen one. Somewhere along the line, the relationship changes. Anakin stops seeing Obi-Wan as an ally and starts seeing him as part of the system. Obi-Wan doesn't even realize it's happening. He thinks it's guiding. Anakin thinks he's being controlled, that he's married to the old ways. Anakin thinks drastic change is necessary, and suddenly they're not fighting the same battle anymore. And that's really the tragedy of the prequels, because nobody wakes up trying to be a villain. They both think they're trying to save the future. Obi-Wan thinks stability will protect everyone. Anakin believes destruction is necessary to fix things. They're looking out at the same galaxy and seeing completely different realities. And then it's Mustafar.
I know how to fix that, though. They just need to run on.
But it's not really a fight. Cords. It's more of a breakup. It's the moment that the mentor realizes that the person he's been training no longer shares his worldview. And Anakin is stronger. He's got more power.
Okay, he's talking. He's yapping. But I do agree with him, because it is different. Like how I grew up versus Gen Z is totally different. But for people not familiar with the prequels of Star Wars, Episode 1, 2, and 3, Episode 1, Anakin is a kid. And then by the time he's Episode 3, he's a young adult. And for people that don't know, Anakin is precursor to being Darth Vader. So I am your father. He's that person. And he oversimplified it, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens with him getting contaminated and looking at all these different things and, you know, wanting to go against stuff that he didn't feel like was right. So when you get older, that's when you realize the villain wasn't necessarily wrong. So I think he was on point, but I think he was like just yapping a little bit too much. And so that's for my Star Wars peeps. If you're still here, definitely let us know how you feel about that. And then this last one, I actually want to talk about, because it goes into what you and I were talking about when we were talking about having electronics and having computers and stuff like that. And this is my guy Tavion, and I thought this was pretty good.
Okay, so I like to consider myself a conspiracy theorist, but I don't necessarily think this is a conspiracy because it's happened right before our eyes. we all know that the increase of PC parts is due to AI. All these companies are now powering these AI models. They need data centers, they need storage, they need RAM, they need GPUs, they need all this. That is why you send a lot of this hardware prices increasing significantly. But what people are not realizing is, as the price of this stuff increase, you start to get priced out of being able to purchase this stuff. What happens if you can't purchase this stuff yourself? You can't purchase hard drives. You can't purchase RAM. You can't purchase GPUs. You can't purchase a lot of these PC parts because they're too expensive. Like, what happens with that? Now you have to use these big companies' products. You have to use their SaaS products. You have to use their cloud products. You have to use all of this stuff. And what does that mean? You no longer own your data. Your data is no longer private to you. You can't store your own data on your own stuff or none of that, nothing. You can't do that. And with your data being stored onto the servers and all the stuff like that, that means they have more access to you. They can advertise more than you. Everything's just like your data is the most important thing, and it's happening right before our eyes to where we cannot own or be able to afford small things such as hard drives. That is crazy.
He is right, because them joints is expensive.
They're
now
so expensive. Like, so I've actually been seeing some videos. About that on TikTok. But I just rolled my eyes at the thought of more advertisements. Like, thanks. Please.
Let me let them finish cooking real quick.
And people are not realizing that, and people are not really paying attention to that. And I think that's really crazy, because as time goes on, that whole idea of privacy and freedom and stuff like that, it's no longer going to matter, because you can't even host. You can't even have your own PC and stuff like that in your own house because this stuff is too expensive. You can even see it right now where Amazon is starting to have like these cloud game servers. Even NVIDIA and Microsoft and all this, they're getting to the point where it's like, well, no, y'all don't even need PCs. just stream it to the cloud. Mm-hmm. Like, huh? That is crazy, bro. Let's start paying attention, dog. This is going to be a crazy thing in the next 5 years.
He ate down.
He right, though.
He definitely ate down, because I absolutely see the game systems being in the cloud.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's definitely, that's when you start feeling bad for the younger generation. Like, they'll have these phones, but we know that Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they don't know how to work computers.
That part.
All they have is tablets. Mm-hmm. So I actually have this said I'm going to actually start showing the kids how to work the stuff. But they so smart, it's like you show them too much, now they doing too much. And that's where it is, because that Natalie, she grabbed that phone, you would think it's hers. And I'd be like, bro. That's what I tell them. I said, oh no, why you gave her your codes? She don't have my codes. I'm like, she not finna be using, you know, unlimited access to my phone and then hitting the wrong thing or whatever. That's what kids do all the time. So I don't know, man. But if you are experiencing issues with buying RAM and hard drives, let us know in the comments. Everybody's been complaining about RAM prices. Because I want to get, eventually I want to put a NAS in here so I can stop paying for Dropbox and everything else.
They don't even know what that is.
Right. And it's just a network address system, storage?
Network something storage. Wow.
We
don't even know what it is. You don't even know what happened to the last security guards.
Network attached storage.
There we go.
It's an address. But it's pretty much you can self-host it and you can access your files from anywhere. And it's just better as you start getting charged more and more to use iCloud, and Google Drive, Dropbox, OneDrive, Mega, everything. You can have your own stuff and protect it. So you connect it right to your router. If you got a whole network set up at your house, I think it's just better that way. That's what a lot of people are doing. Like, they're tired of streaming, so they're just putting stuff on Plex servers and watching it. And piracy has made a comeback. I found me a whole website to watch all Game of Thrones ad-free. Because at this point, you might as well just go back and get cable.
I'm glad that you're enjoying Game of Thrones, though. Because you were like, I've been asking you, have you watched it? You was like, I knew I wouldn't.
I never watched it, so I never.
Ain't it ratchet?
It's worse. It's white people.
It's insane. It's an insane.
You know what's funny? I'm going to leave on this tip. I was telling Giselle that if the people would switch. Like, if black people was in Game of Thrones versus white people, they would say their names ghetto.
Like what?
Tyrion, Khaleesi,
definitely
Joffrey.
Definitely Khaleesi.
Arya. All them people names, they would be saying they ghetto names.
Yeah.
This was, it just ain't got the completion for the protection.
I'm ready for you to actually get to House of Dragon.
What's that? That's after?
It's actually before.
Oh, they're talking about the precursor stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's better.
I may finish it, or I may
Is it?
Or I just may find something that sum it up for me. For the most part, that's what I'll do. But guys, I appreciate you for sticking with us this long, especially the technical difficulties and having fun. I'm promising you we will get back to doing the live content eventually. And, you know, I put the voicemail link out today. Nobody left no voicemail, so leave the voicemails. Subscribe to us on the Patreon. If you got better at your job or got a promotion because of the show, please let us know. We'll definitely shout you out. But like I always say, let's stay textual. And until next time, we out. Peace.